are listening to the Fundamentalist Podcast.
Until the light takes us, am I right, Bog?
Oui.
Welcome into the Fundamentalist Podcast, where heavy metal is the law and court is always in session. On this episode of the podcast, we're going to be diving into the past and bringing back some old favorite segments, such as Mordor Metal Monthly and Covers Worth Covering, what we've been listening to, as well as our review of the latest release from Cattle Decapitation, Terracide. All this, and we say Auf Wiedersehen to the one and only Peter Bog. So, gentlemen, thank you very much for joining, especially to you, Peter. As we mentioned, this is going to be your last episode as a regular on the pod. So we'll let you start off here.
I don't speak German, Duel. What does that? You said Auf Wiedersehen. What was it?
Auf Wiedersehen. Just see you later.
Yeah.
Yes.
Let's see. What have I been listening to? Are we going right into the segments here?
Well, no, I was just asking how's life? How's the wife? How's the churins and all that, you know?
Doing a lot of beer drinking, man. I'm keeping my alcohol intake nice and high.
As God intended. Donahue, what about yourself?
Thought I was with the sickness still lingering on. So passed the wife and my son. We're past it back. It's going like 4 months now. It's been really great. So once I do all of this, I was the strongest immune system known to fucking mankind. So Richard, that's a nice positive.
Do you need to fumigate your house? Like, do you need to call like the termite company and just have them gas the whole place and see if you can get all the parasites out?
I can gas myself, which we don't, stupid shit, but you know.
Well, the biggest parasite of all is the one on the Zoom call right here. They kill that one. Donahue, you've seen some cool shows here too recently, haven't you?
Yes. About a month ago, I got to see the Mighty Fucking Candlemass, and the weekend prior, I listened to their first three records, Epicus Dumicus, Nightfall, and Ancient Dreams. And Setlist, that's all they play. I said they wish the original singer of the band, and it was a fucking fantastic show. All they was play off the first three records and close. Well, in my opinion, the best encore I've ever seen in my entire life. The Solitude and Straight into Fucking Demon's Gate. And it was fucking god tier doom metal. It was one of the few cases where the hype about a band was actually worthy of it. So I needed to send more into the Rob Lowe era and the rest of the Messiah records and whatnot. But
did they play too much from the self-titled?
Oh no, they usually played the first three records. They played one off.
Fuck.
They play one off the last record, A Sweet Evil Son. And that was it, though. It was all old school shit minus that.
As cool as the most recent record is, I know there's a little bit of a boycott of the Rob Lowe era records with this band right now. But I would hope they would at least have touched on some of the self-titled Candlemass record, because that is one of their three best in my opinion.
Yeah, Richard, I'm excited that you've come around to Candlemass, because I know that that's one that, you know, Duel and I have been advocating for behind the scenes here for quite some time, considering that we sat down and did that Under the Knife segment, which listeners, you should go back and take a listen to. I consider them to be incredibly influential, and you know, we can talk about that more when we look at the Covers Worth Covering, but even hearing some of these death metal bands and all, you know, different kinds of styles cover their songs illustrates how wide their influence really is, even though it often goes unacknowledged.
And then about 2 weeks ago, I saw Yob third time, the first time with their new drummer who replaced their, at the time, current drummer Travis, because I guess he's had personal issues, but did a great job. 7 songs, 90 minutes. They actually played the title track, their second record, Catharsis, which is like a 24-minute long song, played the entirety of it. It's fucking phenomenal. And
do these personal issues pertain to the level of economic freedom that playing doom metal affords you?
Possibly. I'm not aware, to be honest. He's apparently has a tour with the band for like 4 to 5 years, and I guess finally this past 2 months, like, I'm done with the band. So he's the filler guy, he's not the full-time guy. And I have to say, one of the coolest things he showed a while is they had 2 songs left, and Mike Scheidt, the vocals guitarist, like, say, you know what, we're not going to waste your time with an encore, like, fake out coming in, you know, fake, you know, leaving, coming in. So we're playing these last 2 songs so y'all can enjoy the rest of your evening, which that was fucking awesome, because I'm so sick of the fake encore bullshit. So they did, I believe, the 5th track off the Atma record, which is a good song, and the first Yob song I ever heard, Quantum Mystic, off their Unreal Never Live record, which is fucking great, energetic, badass fuck doom metal. So
I've also gotten the chance to see a lot of really cool shows here recently. I got to see Iron Maiden for the first time ever. They were playing mostly Somewhere in Time and their most recent record, Senjutsu. Really, really cool. They had this really fun 3D backdrop that kept changing. Some people were complaining about the sound in the O2 arena, but nothing was going to deter me from enjoying my first Iron Maiden show. And I think it was pretty cool. I also got to see Pantera. They sounded great when I saw them, both on guitar, even though on the very first song, they fucked up pretty hard, or at least Zach did, to the point where Rex had to go over to Phil and they were both just shaking their heads and shrugging their shoulders. I was like, oh, it's going to be like that tonight, is it?
Ooh. Okay. What song was it?
It was A New Level. Phil was living his best life barefoot on stage. There's really not a whole lot of movement going on, which is a little bit of a bummer considering how energetic that band used to be in their heyday. Obviously, the solos are not the same, and I would say that most of the time they're not even trying to be, which takes some honesty, I guess you could say, from Zakk Wylde to not even try to kind of put his own spin on things. The set list was what you might imagine. They didn't play any of my five favorite songs, but they played the hits. So pretty much anything you would have wanted to hear, or you probably have heard from Pantera, they played. The very next day, I got to see Gojira and Municipal Waste, which was phenomenal. Gojira is still touring on their most recent record, which is fantastic. So pretty much yep. The exact same set list as when we saw Bach 2 years ago. And then 2 nights ago, I saw Achilles, the very controversial Achilles in this fucking underground. Yeah, underground cellar. Actually, it's a coffee shop. And then two floors down, it's like this musty stone dungeon, and the sound kind of sounded.
This sounds
like it too.
Really appropriate for racist accused black metal, right?
No, for sure, 100%. The sound was just like where sound goes to die. It was just exactly a low rumble. I felt bad for them. It's like I don't know how many hooded, masked black metal bands are in existence, but clearly too many because every single band had the same shtick. We're gonna walk out in a mask and a hood. It'll be cult.
I was going to say, did you see Sun by mistake? Because if it was just hooded guys when it's a low rumble, you that might have been a different band.
At least it would have been on purpose then. Like, at least I know that there was supposed to be some melody going on. And so I almost left the show early. I didn't. I stuck it out to the end. But maybe earplugs would have been better. Maybe it would have cut out some of that low rumble. But I went in there raw dog and it was just double bass and vocals and this. Not white noise. What would you call that? Black noise? Just bad.
Blackened white noise.
Yeah, black and white noise. How about that?
Years ago at Santos, I saw that Gentleman Accouchement from the UK at Santos, and they sounded fucking terrible. Like the noise kept bouncing all around the room. I was outside smoking cigarettes, and they sounded way better outside than they did. Like front row was total dog shit.
I own Accouchement on vinyl, and it doesn't sound too dissimilar on there. So I think that was the product, actually.
I don't know. The other two bands before them sounded great. So I don't know what the fuck happened there. But,
no, that's what it's supposed to sound like.
Well, I was on press live. Also, probably nearly blackout drunk. That might have something to do with it, but you know.
Let's dive into what we've been listening to. Richard, I'll go ahead and start with you.
All right. Me and Duel are going to see the Kings of the fucking Moose Pussy Agalloch in a few months in Germany. I've been a blitzer there.
Do we need to explain that reference here? I don't know if that's just going to like fly. That inside joke here, but...
Well, it's Duel that came up with it, so he can explain it. So I just thought it was funny. I just kind of go with it.
No, it's unexplainable, I think, unless they see the meme, which itself doesn't make any sense. So,
was it me who came up with it?
I'm pretty sure
there was that.
I think I made a reference, but I thought the was Richard who actually linked it to Agalloch.
I think I made a joke that said like, "What is Agalloch except the moose pussy you hit along the way" or something like that. So maybe it was actually me, but it all derived from this bizarre meme of like metalish looking guy with a blurred background, like you know, seemingly kind of like you know, stumbling around a campfire. And what did it say when you've been? When you've been hit riding the moose pussy for too long and you can't get off.
Yeah, that was it. Yes, Agalloch, playing the first show since 2016 Germany. So I recently bought their first four records, the best one. The last one's not that great. Ignore that motherfucker. Third one, specifically Ash Against the Grain, which is my first Agalloch record. And still great, still holds up really well, though sadly, it was the last one that their vocalist, John, I believe it's Ham, how you pronounce the last name, H-A-U-G-H-M. The last one he did clean vocals on, the Special Marrow of the Spirit, which is a great record, but none of his cleans are on there. This record, though, fantastic. My favorite tracks would be the first track, Limbs, second track, Falling Snow, and my personal favorite, which I hope to hear, not unlike The Waves, but phenomenal mix of black metal, doom, neo-folk. Fucking fantastic. Check it out.
Richard, I want to say that you should go back and re-listen to that last Agalloch record because everybody says ignore Ran Chaos from Dissection. And I think that we here have all given that album another chance and realized it's actually fantastic.
I actually did like 3 weeks ago. I did actually go back to it. And it's not bad. It's like three songs I liked on it, but when you reach the peak that was Bear on the Speed, I'm sorry, you can't just go back to autopilot. We're just rocking out with this one here. And, you know, maybe that's it's a bit hyperbolic, but it's still Aglock. It's still got, but just does that oomph and je ne sais quoi, that pale folklore, the mantle, Ash Gets Gray, and Mare of the Spirit fucking had. So it's just almost like a shell. Like I get they were going for something more streamlined and shorter because Mare of the Spirit's like this massive, like 70, 80 minute fucking record. I get it. It's epic. It's big. It's long. It's atmospheric. You want to scale it down. I get it, but does it fly with me personally?
Bach mentioned Rhea Chaos, and all I can think is the since that was the last record from Aglock, was that also their final and ultimate victory before moving on to this next plane of existence? I don't think anybody killed themselves after it was, so maybe not.
So a band that I was a big fan of, Necrofire, they dropped their second record 2 weeks ago, Burning Shadows in the Southern Night. And if I got a chance to listen to it this week, and I have to say, I enjoyed it a lot. The production is a bit more polished. They got, I forget the guy's name, but this guy, he's done like Tom Waits, Unsane, stuff like that. So it's a bit more polished on the production, but I feel the intensity almost took like a step up musically-wise. All the songs are diverse, heavy, interesting, melodic, a lot of cool, like creepy, like melodies and atmosphere almost kind of remind me of the Silo 3 soundtrack, which in my opinion, the best gaming soundtrack of all fucking time. So very much enjoy that one. Brought the songs to me that stuck out to me, Total Southern Darkness, Forbidden Light of the Black Moon, which is such an obvious dissection sounding title. It's fucking ridiculous. And Destroying Angels, which is a great track. And finally, going back to Candlemass, their first record, Epicus, Dumicus, Metallicus, just fucking doom metal perfection. I'm not going to go into it. If you love doom metal, check out Epicus, Dumicus, Metallica. It's fucking great. Favorite songs, Solitude, Demon's Gate, best encore I've ever fucking seen, and Black Stone Wielder is another song I very much enjoy off the first Candlemass record.
It's funny that you mentioned Necrofire right after you mentioned Rhea and Chaos, considering what a worship music that it is.
Oh, yes.
It's only appropriate that we transition to the ultimate dissection tribute band, bordering on parody to the point where I'm surprising they're not getting sued, but it's so damn good, I don't care. I'm, of course, talking about Tholkandra, who are back with yet another heaping of dissection worship called Hail the Abyss. And I think I mentioned this in the Slack channel, but holy shit, like they have to be trolling the people who own the rights to dissection's music because they'll straight up play a cover for 6 seconds, like just enough to where it's at the point where it's not the same thing. They'll change notes and then they'll change key ever so slightly. But to anyone who has heard dissection's music, you're like, oh, this is a fucking cover or at worst a rendition of this song.
Duel, it's like album, you know, in Family Guy when they're trying to play a popular song and they just change the tune like just enough. Tholkandra, yes, is like the Family Guy versions of dissection.
Yes, although that seems like a slight insult because it makes it seem like it's not good when in reality it's fantastic. This one has so much energy, it just drips Storm of the Light's Bane throughout all of it. There's even a little bit of goat whore influence too. There's some straight up black and roll, yeah, I believe, on Fuck the Wings, yeah, of Cosmic Fire and on Acheronian Cult. I'm glad to see that the worship music deuces aren't drying up here with this band. If anything, they're getting better. The release in 2021, A Dying Wish, was good, but it was by far the weakest, I think, of all Tholkandra records. And so I was thinking,
I didn't care for myself, I understand.
Really? It was on my top records for that year. All right, well, I guess I'm in the minority here.
That sounds like a you problem.
I mean, it was definitely good, but I still thought it was definitely the weakest of all the Tholkandra releases so far. But I'm glad this one is kind of a return to form in a sense that this might be one of the best. Moving on to something that's not quite worship music, Mutoid Man.
That's a nip.
They have members from Cave In and Converge, and they're about to release their fourth full-length record called Mutants. They just put out the second single called A Siren Song. The first single was called The Void. I've been listening to those a little bit. A little catchy, a little poppier. Really fun to sing along to. And this band's just pure fun, so I really don't mind if it's not just pure headbanging metal. And if you watch the 2 Minutes to Late Night YouTube channel, you see a lot of the members from Mutoid Man on there pretty often. Another album I've been listening to is from Cloak, their latest full-length, Black Flame Eternal. Now, this band had been putting out pretty reliable black and roll ever since their inception, but this release is
pleasantly a little bit different, a little bit more straight up black metal. You could hear songs like Invictus and Eye of the Abyss and The Holy Dark really embody this. So I'm really hoping to see that maybe this band continues in this vein. Nothing against their black and roll material. It's just after three albums of it, I think they had room to grow. And maybe if they had stuck to that old formula, would have had slightly diminishing returns. But this is a promising new direction for the band. And lastly, I've been listening to this Urfaust. Now, Urfaust is named after the unfinished interpretation of the medieval German Faustian tale that later turned into story we all know, Faust. They're really interesting in the sense that they are atmospheric, ambient black metal, but their vocals are totally clean. Very, very almost like bard level music. Very, very evil, very, very evocative of medieval Europe, medieval Germany. But
I don't want to sound like vocals. The traditionalist here, but can it be black metal if there's no harsh vocals?
It is.
Okay.
It can be. I'm going to listen to this. You should. Urfaust. Really fucking cool. They've been around since 2004. They just put out their most recent full length in 2020, Teufelsgeist. But they have some great records all along the way, particularly Geist ist Teufel from 2004. Highly, highly recommend. They also have some cool little splits. They have splits with the Ruins of Beverast and King Dude as well. Urfaust, check that shit out. What about you, Bog?
You know, I've come across, I mentioned a while back that I was reading a book about Kurt Cobain, a biography on him, and I didn't realize how close he was with Buzz from Melvins. And I know that they're a band that's often cited as a big influence on, I know particularly Mastodon. You know, they said that those guys even met based off of their mutual adoration for Melvins. And so I went back and listened to their first record called Gooey Porch Treatments. So anyways, Melvins, yeah, it's some weird shit. So this Gooey Porch Treatment record is apparently declared as the very first sludge metal record, which itself is a genre that I have a hard time trying to pin down. But I don't know, man. It's weird. Like, it's 17 tracks. A lot of them are pretty short. You know, they have song titles like The Influence of Atmosphere and Leech with three E's in it. So I don't know. It doesn't strike me as being particularly metal, although I can see why potentially a band like, you know, Mastodon, if you consider their early records, might have been drawn to it. I also watched a pretty interesting documentary called American Hardcore, which is just about what it's about American Hardcore. And I was turned on to a band called SSD Control. I've often said that, you know, I don't do a lot of punk, but like Minor Threat has been one of the punk bands that I've definitely had a lot of respect for. Ian MacKay, I think, is awesome. And he was prominently featured interview wise in that documentary. And SSD Control, obviously slightly controversial name and referencing the Nazis there. I think that they sort of downgraded that name to the slightly less controversial SSD, which I'm sure in the 80s was not a commonly used acronym for solid state drive as it is these days. And it makes me giggle a little bit. But I've been listening to their earliest EP, Get It Away. They're from Boston, actually, Richard. They're from up in your neck of the woods. So you might want to check them out. But
my people. Oh, I'll check in the chat.
Not necessarily your people, but from where you're at. What I was going to say is I think that I'm realizing that I actually do really like, you know, it's sort of the hipster worship part of punk, but like straight edge early American hardcore works for me. You know, it's fucking frenetic ass music. It sort of scratches the same part of me that, you know, crossover thrash metal does. So I don't know. Maybe y'all should give that a shot too. It's admittedly, again, a genre that I didn't gravitate towards, in part because I feel like there is a little bit of unfortunate kind of, I don't know, resentment between the like metalheads and punk rockers, you know. And I think for me as a musician, I always wanted more technicality, which is why I think I didn't naturally gravitate towards more punk, which is really just kind of cathartic, energetic music, you know, with aggression. But that's just my own opinion on that. I'm not a scholar, but I'm trying to learn more. I watched the documentary, so give the documentary a watch too.
2 points. One, it's interesting you mentioned that because I kind of always appreciated that more emotional nature of hardcore and punk. But I feel like the older I get, when you can't exercise that energy live the same way you could as a youth, it's less relevant to me.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, the music might make you want to just fucking let it all out there on the floor, but get to the wrong side of 30. Are you really pitting anymore? I mean, if you do, if you still have a body to pit, hell yeah, but not for me, bro.
Concluding what it is that I've been listening to, I've still been on a huge Later Woods kick. I know that last time I professed my love for Woods 5, I went back to Woods 4 because in my heart, those two records are really kind of competing for the number one spot. I still think that I'm leaning towards Wood 5 these days, which is what Richard believes and Duel disagrees. One of the things that I observed about Woods is that it's actually one of the few really, you know, metal bands, like doom metal bands. Most of the music is about like romance. You know, it's about like his relationships with a woman. And I think that that was something that struck me as something I really haven't seen a whole lot in metal ever. You know, there's a lot of aggressive lyrics, but in terms of something being not only just kind of like a sexual point of view on that, you know, which you get a lot of in like hair metal and whatnot, but like a relationship component makes Woods even, again, if they weren't an extremely unique band prior to that, I really can't think of another act. Again, the only band that I ever can really compare them to is Typo Negative. And I wonder if that's simply, you know, just drawing my gaze over that direction, because sometimes sonically, David Gold's vocals sound a bit similar to Mr. Steel himself. So
very much so.
Probably done for right now. Thanks, guys.
Let's go ahead and move on into an old favorite segment. Let's get into Mordor Metal Monthly. This edition of Mordor Metal Monthly brings to you Fema Nazgul. Now, obviously, the Nazgul are the nine former men who are now the Ring Race, as they are more popularly known. Fema Nazgul, a formerly one woman, but now three woman atmospheric black metal band from Asheville, North Carolina. They released their first EP, The Age of Men is Over, which is a quite famous line from Gothmog, one of the more famous orcs in the Lord of the Rings story. And their most recent release is a single called Aemalacht. They also put out a split with Awenden in 2021. Fema Nazgul itself also put out a full length in the throes of the pandemic called No Dawn for Men. Now, the main, I guess, creative force in Fema Nazgul is Margaret Killjoy, who does guitars, bass, drums, keyboards, piano, accordion, Dane axe, and vocals, and now does the backing vocals since Laura Beach joined the band. It is Laura who actually does the lead vocals on No Dawn for Men. And their most recent addition is Meredith Yayanos, plays the theremin and the violin. And this is going to be my ignorance, but I don't even know what the fuck a theremin is.
Theremin's a really interesting instrument. It was invented in the 60s. And the way that you play it is there's a rod that's like electrically charged, and you actually fluctuate the note by moving your hand towards or against it. You actually have no contact with the instrument itself, and it makes this kind of interesting electronic sound. If you've never seen videos of someone playing a theremin, it's a fascinating thing.
Using like your energy, your proximity to the actual current.
It's very cool.
That's sick.
Of course, the black metal screams, the blast beats, the normal black metal stuff. But it's really like the more folky, non-metal instruments to me that kind of stuck out more. To me, black metal is kind of a hit or miss genre anyways. This is kind of in the middle ground where there's a lot of shit the unorthodoxy I didn't like, but I don't know. It's very opposite. It was an interesting listen and something I kind of do actually want to listen to more. Most black metal to me is like, fuck yeah, or fuck, this is bullshit. This is kind of in that middle ground where I kind of want to give it another listen to kind of get deeper into it. Myself, at least.
I found it interesting just to start off the discussion of this band that their first EP, when it was a one woman project, is almost bosom worship. I found very, very raw, very, very dirty, as well as an overt worship of Tolkien and his themes, whether it be the aesthetics of the album. Funny, the name, I was listening to an interview by The Necrosexual. You should check him out on YouTube, in which Margaret said that she actually didn't come up with the name herself, but that she was out in a bar in Asheville, and I guess some dude was yelling at this woman who called her a feminazi, and she said, I'm not a feminazi, I'm a Fema Nazgul, which Margaret herself is a trans woman. The band themselves are never going to have any male influence, apparently, or at least not any cis men. Even though they say they've had some rather famous or well-to-do, well-known individuals in the black metal community offer their services to them, both as live and recording members. This quote from Margaret I thought was funny. She said that she was very upset about the number of Nazis and alt-right individuals who kind of permeate in the black metal scene. And this interview was taking place during 2020. So this is kind of when this discourse really started to come to the forefront again. But she said she looked forward to being able to piss off as many, you know, insecure white dudes in their mom's basement as possible, which I love as a statement. But I also thought that I'm really glad that in the year 2023 that anybody can be a cringe edgelord, not just men. Now it can be women too. Now it can be trans people too. If your whole goal is just to be like, I would have pissed off as many people as possible. It just reminds me of like those quotes you'd hear from Euronymous from the early 90s. Like, I am pestilence and death and blah, 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 blah. Just from the side of the the trans cringe, feminists.
Cringe the equal opportunity employer to anybody. And so we can all get a little cringe. Okay.
Let's go ahead and talk about it musically, though. Let's start off with The Age of Men is Over.
I want to jump out here. We talked about the theremin, and I have to point out that Margaret is listed as playing the Dane axe, which I was like, is that an instrument or is it actually what I think it is, which is a battle axe?
Is she chopping wood?
Yeah, I didn't pick up the axe, but apparently there was some axe audio in this
like,
at some point.
Like she's slinging.
Well, no, like, but if you look at what a Dane axe is, it's a battle axe. It looks like what Gimli carries around in The Lord of the Rings. Yeah, so, like, you wouldn't be chopping wood with that. It's designed to cut motherfuckers down, you know?
Yeah, but I say, like, she looks like a bike. She's swinging it back and forth, get the like slight like wind effect. Like, I'm curious, like, where's that?
I didn't pick
those abuse.
I didn't pick it up either. That's why I wanted to bring it up. I didn't know if that was just like, you know, facetious or if it was just, you know, put in there for the.
Yeah, it's got to be facetious because I just Googled Dane axe and, like you said, came up axes, and I typed in Dane axe instrument and it was all the same thing, just an axe. Well,
Interesting.
Margaret's got a sense of humor. I like it.
Obviously. Pair Tolkien nerd, so yeah.
Anyway, musically, what do we think about this first EP, Age of Men is Over?
I would agree with you. I mean, I don't know if it's Burzum Worship necessarily, but it's an easy thing to point out when you have something that has that amount of sort of saturated. I listened to them out of order, and so I listened to this one later, and that is when I became aware of the fact that there is a different vocalist now, because Laura's vocals are a big upgrade, in my opinion. It's not meant to slander necessarily, because, you know, not everything has to be perfect, especially when you're going for Necro. I'm glad that Margaret decided to bring some other talent into the fold for that next iteration of musical release.
I think she realized it too. Laura wouldn't have been invited to join the band if Margaret thought that, yeah, everything is just fine the way it is, mm-hmm. obviously. I'm excited for a third release, but before we get into that, let's talk about No Dawn for Men. Everything about this record gets upgraded from the first EP. The first EP is very raw. It's, I don't want to say it's mixed poorly, but it is a bit cacophonous. There's a lot going on. It's very easy to miss what can happen. There's almost, I guess, if you were listening to a black metal record next to a waterfall, there is that almost hiss going on. Although in this necro sense of black metal, you kind of need that for the atmosphere that they're going for, I think. If you want to be totally negative, you just say the record is mixed poorly. Depends on how you want to look at it. If you go on YouTube and you look at the YouTube comments, there is definitely a lot of butthurt regarding this band. So if you want some entertainment, I highly recommend going to YouTube, the official streams of this, and look at the comments. You will not be disappointed. As far as the humor, you might be disappointed in us as a species, but I digress. No Dawn for Men, the full length, just as it pertains to the music. And I think it's a big upgrade all around. Starting off with one of the first tracks, Illa, the Mother of Death. Really, really awesome. Laura's vocals really shine.
It's not really like that metal, though. Do you know what I mean? It's the most prominent instrument, I would point out. And you talked about the mixing, actually, Duel, which is not something I had thought about, because I had assumed that it was all totally deliberate about that, but is like an accordion, which, you know, I always like seeing a little bit more Baroque instrumentation being brought into the fold, which is why I think that potentially you could consider there to be a fairly strong folk metal influence on this group.
Absolutely.
One of the things that I would say is, and I think that we're all kind of grasping at the same sense here, but I to myself at times said that because these are so atmospheric and that's how let me try and string that together. One of the things that I think many of us were trying to get at is the fact that most of these compositions are really drawn out and fairly atmospheric compositions. There isn't really distinct riffing. And so there are times where I said, is this post-metal? Because we've kind of lost that aspect a little bit. And I feel like that is kind of how I feel about Feminazgul overall, is that I had joked in the Slack channel that I came up with like a five superlative genre classification for this, which was atmospheric, black, and feminist post-folk. And I think that to me is like the post element, is that it doesn't ever really come back to distinctive riffing patterns. I'm not going to say they're completely absent, but it's definitely not the focus. The focus is definitely always on As you said, sort of the big mixing, the big experience, and kind of little else, I think.
What is post-black but the atmosphere of black metal bands along the way, sir?
Well, I mean, we talk about all these black gaze is something that, you know, we've thrown in there, and I would say, you know, this is in some ways, I would say this is what I think a lot of people think Def Heaven is. It's like a group that sounds a lot like this, even though I you know, I'm also a big fan of Def Heaven, and I have to defend them a lot.
Like, there are a few tracks, Illa, Mother Death, I thought was good. I would say
With the Stag is good.
Yeah, I'd say no, Barry was the Stag. And I'd say that probably the most riffy, maybe the Rot in the Field of Holy is probably the most riffy sounding song on the record. But a lot of it is very atmospheric based, not necessarily riff based. And honestly, as not as sure as insult probably is, probably the two favorite songs off the record were the EP, the No Dawn version of the previous EP, To the Throat and The Shadows of the Dead God. Those were more riffy and far more interesting than a lot of this record.
I think that the most metal track on this record is the final one, In the Shadow of Dead Gods, because that was something that I looked at myself as like, you know, at parts, this strayed so far away from what I consider to be black metal. And I think that that's part of their mission statement, though, is to just kind of say, like, fuck all this stuff. You know, me as a person who does a heavy metal podcast started to get my feelings hurt because there weren't that many blast beats. And, you know, and I even have a note here that says, like, Immortal and this band almost don't feel like the same genre, you know, because of, like, how different they are.
They offended a cis man. Mission accomplished.
All right. Here we go.
Apparently so. Also, Immortal unfortunately became, like, a black and roll band. So, unfortunately.
Yeah, one of the things that I wanted to say, since I sort of made a reference to it now, is that there's something about the drums in this that feel very, like, new wave to me. Like, they take kind of, like, the black and roll, like, snare crash, danceable, downright danceable black metal, as we've called it in the past here, and take it to, like, an even farther place where it's almost like, you know, like, I think that the drums in this extend so far in that direction that they almost start to sound like New Order tracks, you know, because they are definitely canned drums. And I think that they do have a little bit of an EDM influence as well, which is something that apparently Margaret also gets into. So I think that that influence comes over here. To me, not with great success. And again, as a cis man who does a metal podcast, I don't think it's working that great. I would have liked to have seen them just like lay down the intent bit more, just like every once in a while, just drive the chorus home, and then we can go back to it. You know,
I would actually agree with that. So I guess that's what my criticism of the record was: the drumming is not that great. And I didn't even think about the kind of EDM or like New Order. They say that actually makes a lot of sense to me. And I probably the weaker aspects is the drumming. Not that it has to constantly like Dark Throw, not saying that, but a little variety, and the drumming never really matched the intensity of what's going on around it, in my opinion, at least.
Another straight-up Tolkien reference that'll more than justify their, or to further justify their inclusion here, is their track Look Not to Erebor. Erebor is obviously the Lonely Mountain, which underneath houses the Kingdom of the Dwarves, the Durin folk, as Tolkien often referred to them as. I personally think that this overly, I almost revealed a bias there, overly atmospheric folk black metal
overly
works well within the realm of Lord of the Rings, Tolkien, Middle Earth inspired metal. I think it works especially well here. Maybe not quite so much if you strip that away, but given the fact that it does exist in this space, I'm willing to be a little bit more forgiving for the fact that maybe the instrumentation is not quite as traditional as a black metal purist would expect it to be. But we've already established that atmospheric black really runs the gamut in what it can be. Like, on one end of atmospheric black metal, you have something like Misarthrum. And then in the middle, you have somewhere like Summoning. And then you also have bands Migwa and Drutk and Old Tar. Like, I'm totally okay with just throwing them in there. I don't know where exactly they fit. Maybe they are pretty far on one end of the spectrum, but I still feel confident in including them under that banner, because it is a rather wide tent, that atmospheric black metal.
It's getting wider all the time, apparently.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wanted to say one thing, Duel. I wanted to jump in there when we're talking about the instrumentation before we focus on other aspects, is I think one of the things that maybe was the best and provided some of this unfortunate contrast between what we're describing as sort of the lack of riffs is that Meredith, I think her last name is probably pronounced Ianos, who played the violin and the theremin, as you said, in the intro to the segment, is phenomenal. Those violin compositions and the string compositions are done so well that I sort of wondered about why the rest of it didn't actually sort of live up to that watermark, in my opinion.
I think she joined later. I think she joined in 2021. I think most of this album was recorded in 2020.
Like, that's she's credited here, at least on Bandcamp, as
I think that's probably was her audition, essentially. So, she was good, credited, but she joined the group full time. So I think going forward, there will be more of her. Hopefully we'll see more. It's been 2 years since then. Yeah.
I'd love to see her contribute more and put in some artistic direction, because I think that she could sharpen this whole thing into something that's going to be quite compelling. I think we all agree.
I'd say so, yeah. I would take another little more balanced mixing, more balanced songwriting. So, yeah, I give another shot, sure. Which is more than I said, a lot of black metal. Again, what I actually really love or really fucking hate. So at least it's a nice middle ground, which I can't say about a lot of the genre.
I think the band is interesting just for its instrumentation, and because it's not straight up black metal, it is a little bit of a different interpretation, which is really cool. The political statement into it is obviously a positive for me. For many others, it'll be a negative, but whatever, fuck it. And I also really obviously appreciate the Middle Earth references that abound here. Anything to do with Tolkien's world that he created is a plus in my book. I'm going to give Feminazgul a thumbs up, personally. I don't know about you guys. I definitely have some songs liked on my unnamed streaming service that we'll be coming back to. I don't see this as like a one and done. Okay, that was cool, and I'll never listen to this band again type.
Yeah, I'm going to give Feminazgul a thumbs up as well. I think that this wasn't a perfect release, but I think that clearly there's some mana that's being harnessed here, and hopefully they can get that together and give us the next truly great release.
Nice RPG reference, by the way, mana. I'll give it like a middle thumb.
There's no middle thumb. We said that we're not doing that. You got to shit.
God damn it. Fine. I'm going to give it a very slightly pessimistic upper thumb and leave room for error, okay? I'll do that. Because I won't shit down because I feel this could be done better. That's the only reason why.
Excellent. Let's move on. Covers worth covering. Now, we mentioned the famous doom metal band Candlemass earlier in the episode, which is appropriate because this edition of Covers Worth Covering focuses exclusively on Candlemass. Three covers, three different bands, all covering three famous Candlemass tracks. We have Swallow the Sun performing Solitude, Entombed covering Black Dwarf from the fantastic self-titled Candlemass record, and then Abysmal Dawn going totally outside their wheelhouse and covering perhaps the most famous Candlemass song, Bewitched. Let's talk about Richard's favorite of these three bands doing the covers, Entombed, and why. Let's talk about why it's by far the least interesting of the three.
Yeah.
I went this. I was not familiar with this record, so I initially listened to this cover. And I thought, well, it's aggressive, but who's doing vocals? Because Entombed had a very revolving line. I looked up, oh, it's LG, the Left Hand Path LG, one of the best death metal records of all time. And wow, he sounds like shit. And it was... I was back to the original, this 2005 self-titled with the Messiah on vocals. So I was like, this version is way fucking better. I'll say the Entombed version is, it's riffier. Correction. It's more aggressive. It's more aggressive. But the tone isn't really there. And it's not particularly great. It's an interesting take on it, I guess. But the worst one by far out of these three sets of covers, in my humble opinion.
So where I'm going to give them credit is that they picked, as far as Candlemass goes, a slightly deep cut. Okay, usually when people are surface skimmers for sure. With Candlemass, they don't get into the glory of the later years, which is such a goddamn shame. Even you yourself, Richard, though, like, you know, Duel and I are like, Rob Lowe plus the self-titled is just like four records there that are unfuckwithable, all right? And
I believe you, and I was just messing around, but no, I'm getting to it. I assure you,
it's almost blasphemous, but it almost shits on those first three records, even though they are so legendary.
I'm gonna
come along. You're sickening me, sir. I just see the shit live. I can't agree with that statement, sir.
Because
you haven't heard it.
I love the earlier ones. So I want to go ahead and just give Entombed, you know, a golf clap here for knowing the catalog and picking, like, you know, one of the most aggressive later era tracks. And I think that was really cool. I always characterize when we have done the segment in the past as evolutionary or revolutionary covers. And this is a blanket statement, but these are all evolutionary covers. There isn't one that really takes a strong point of view. And I would say that this is, we'll talk about the Abysmal Dawn one here in a second, but this is a very, very, maybe not even evolutionary. This is a faithful cover. This is Entombed playing the song at the same BPM, you know, in the tuning that their guitars were in with the vocalists that they have. There's really no interpretation here. And I think that itself is kind of too bad. This is fun. And I love to play covers, you know, every time that I've ever been in a band, like, you know, how many times have I played Master of Puppets in my life, you know? And that's what this felt like to me, is it was really more them having a good time, playing one of their, you know, hometown heroes, Entombed also being from Sweden, rather than them actually trying to make this any kind of artistic statement. So, and not to say that it isn't art, they did it well. I don't love the vocals. I think that JR struggles the most.
LG.
Who is JR? Tolkien? There we go. All right.
JR Tolkien, LG Petrov, who unfortunately passed about 2 years ago. RIP LG.
Yeah, RIP. He had some kind of horrible cancer too. I think like with some kind of bowel cancer or something.
Yeah, it's a very, very rare one. He has a stage 3. Yeah, he unfortunately went very quickly.
To Bog's point, I agree. I said already that it's the least interesting of the three covers, and that's not necessarily to disparage it. It's just, it is pretty much a one-to-one outside of the vocal styling. They do it in the Entombed, much more gruff, growly, death metal style vocals, which, unfortunately, when you compare it to the original, I think is a downgrade overall with the song. So, yeah, one-to-one cover, but the vocals make it worse. And so there's never, like, the way I judge a cover is there's always got to be a reason why you would want to listen to that version over the original, whether it's just like a total reimagining or this, which is a one-to-one that's somehow not as good or worse. And unfortunately, that's just where this stands for me.
Yeah. No, it's not terrible, but out of these three, it's definitely the worst,
I think,
objectively, in my humble opinion.
As we've done this segment, one of the things that we've seen is that there are often times where a group is recording an album and it seems like they sort of cherry pick a song that they all probably mutually really like. I go back and think about that cover of Wood by Opeth, because it was basically all the same gear that they did on Watershed, you know, same mixing. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it was just kind of done, you know, using the David X sensibilities about musical promotion these days, that you just got to keep like funneling the content out there. And I think that this is kind of falls into that column for me.
Let's transition into a cover I think we all will agree, maybe the best of the three, maybe we'll have some disagreement, and that's Swallow the Sun's version of Solitude. While much like Entombed's cover of Very Faithful, it does add the Swallow the Sun stamp. It puts their own spin on this song, which I really like, including some slightly harsher vocals at times that they use as accents. Maybe slightly, I don't want to say heavier, because Candlemass is also heavy, but Swallow the Sun's interpretation of heavy, their instrumentation of it, I think it works out really, really well. And while I'm not ready to say it's the best version of this song, there's definitely reasons to go back and listen to this version of the song as opposed to Candlemass's.
I'm just going to go out and say it, Duel. I'll jump into the fire on this one to say I think that this is somebody else doing Candlemass better than Candlemass. I have a note here that just says everything about this rules. I don't even really love Swallow the Sun that much, actually. I know that, Richard, you have a Swallow the Sun record on your top 10 of all time, which we did a while back.
I have a Swallow the Sun fucking tattoo.
Oh, I saw them live. They were good. I don't know. I know that dearly departed Dante also is a huge fan of this group, and
we all saw him together.
We did.
Yeah. All three of us, for the entire crowd, us and Timothy.
Oh yeah, that's right. So there were a total of four
Asian kid. That poor Asian kid that Dan found.
I remember I was supposed to go to that show. That was the same week as the Voivod Yob show, so I had to choose because I forgot there was the same week. So fuck it, like, yeah, Voivod, I got to choose. I have Swallow the Sun. So I didn't want to go to that, though.
I will say I'll never forget you, like, forcing Dan to, like, chug a tall can before the Uber arrived outside of the Rainbow Liquor Store on Magazine Street next to the ice. We were between the ice chest and like the alleyway. And I was like, dude, I feel like I am fucking 16 years old again. Like, I haven't felt that way since, I don't think. And did he throw up later that night, too? Like,
Fuck yeah, he did. Of course he did.
Anyways, pitiful, you know, crowds that I've ever experienced. Incredibly.
That's the curse of New Orleans shows. There's either a fuck ton of people there or no one there. There's no middle ground at a New Orleans show.
The podcast tagline used to be the best metal podcast from the worst metal town.
It truly is. But what isn't terrible is this cover. I really do think that they do it better. The harsh vocals when they come in, man, I got goosebumps. I was like, dude, these are fucking hitting right now on this track. Now, like, the only thing that I can say, Solitude is a classic when it comes to Candlemass's catalog, and so it's a bit like fuck them, yes, covering, dude, Master of Puppets. But I, as you said, Duel, the fact that they were, I would still call this evolutionary because they don't change the composition that much. It's still relatively the same BPM. You know, I when we did Covers Worth Covering and Chemist actually fucked with the way that their cover of Down on a Hole was composed. You know, that's when they're starting to take more artistic liberties. This was still them playing the song. They just, their impression of it worked better, like, you know, them putting their own stamp on it. Like the peaks were just a little bit higher than what Attuned was doing on Black Dwarf, and I will say of the three, this to me is hands down my favorite.
I can't disagree with really any of that. I think that's accurate. What about your thoughts?
Well, not funny story. This is like the first Candlemass song I heard unknowingly. This is a bonus track off their first record from 01. The Morning Never Came, and funny story, is actually two versions of this song. There is this version where Miko, the Swallow Some vocalist. There's also another version where Swallow Some plays the instruments and Messiah does vocals. So there's actually two versions of this song.
Where the fuck is this?
I had done a bird disc years ago. I'm not sure it's YouTube, but it does exist. There are
two. Dude, you knew that we were doing this, and you didn't tell us? What the fuck?
Well, I don't have a comp. I used to have it. I don't know where it's at, as far as I mentioned. But both versions are great. But this is actually the first Candlemass song I ever heard. I thought it was Swallow the Sun. So that's the whole point. Ever came, this song came. I was like, oh, wow, this is a cool Swallow the Sun cover. And then, like, oh, it's this Candlemass cover. So, yeah, I love this version. I'm super biased. I love Swallow the Sun. Version's great. Got to See is the best encore ever. Definitely super biased saying this is my favorite of all three.
There's no bias. I think it's just objectivity at this point.
Yeah, I'd say so. At least in democracy, three out of three agree. But no, it's great. Fucking, yeah, it just kicks ass, dude. Check it out. I mean,
last but not least, I do want to shine a light on Abysmal Dawn's cover of Bewitched. Now, like Entombed's cover of Black Dwarf, it is very, very faithful. But here's where I'll give Abysmal Dawn their plaudits here. Not only are the highlights, I think, a little bit heavier, just because Abysmal Dawn is obviously a death metal band covering a doom metal band, but secondly, Abysmal Dawn totally changed their vocal style to do this. They could have done it in the same manner that Entombed covered Black Dwarf and just stuck with the growls and the gutturals and done the vocal styling, but they did this all clean, which shows some real range from their vocalist in Abysmal Dawn, which I really, really appreciate. It's not all that different from the original, and in a sense, that kind of diminishes a little bit from the track. Because again, it is so close that you'd wonder why you would ever listen to this version over the original. Right. But it is just a smidge heavier. And I do like the inflections of the vocals on this too. I wouldn't come back to this every time, but every now and then I could see myself listening to this version of Bewitched.
Yeah, Duel, you hit it.
They did a faithful version of a very famous metal song here.
Even the solo is note for note pretty much the same. I went back and listened to them comparatively, yes. And that was surprising because, I mean, even, you know, you think about, like, I mean, obviously, I don't know if we ever did it on the air. I can't remember, but, you know, Death's famous cover of Painkiller, like, Chuck still does his own solo as a point of departure. And, the vocals are not the same, obviously. But on this one, one of the things that I think is actually most impressive about this is how well Abysmal Dawn's vocalist does Messiah. It's actually incredible, you know, like almost like, you know, as Duel likes to say, what a dead ringer he was, you know, just in terms of range. And that's a hard thing to do. I mean, he's a hell of a vocalist. I mean, they've had a few in Candlemass and Messiah is considered the classic. And he has, you know, an operatic soaring style that I think few people could touch even. You know, I'd be curious to hear Rob Halford give this a go because his style is so different, if he would actually, you know, be able to wind up doing it as faithfully as it was done here on this Bewitched cover. So
third best Candlemass vocalist behind Rob Lowe and Rob Lowe's notepad, Messiah.
Yeah, this version here, Bizzle Dawn is actually a band I'm supposed to see twice that I've not been able to, so maybe we'll see them one day. Charles Elliott is doing so. Charles Elliott's the guitarist vocalist of this band, and it was it's just note for note, it's a very well done cover. I do like the kind of in the background, kind of hear like the death growls in the chorus parts. It's a little slight twist on it, but very good cover. It's cool to see because he could have done like a version of it. It would have been kind of cool, but a bit like, ugh. I want to say cringe, but just ugh, wouldn't be particularly good. But it was just, you know, to see them tech by the comfort zone is a very cool thing for a U.S. tech death band to cover a Swedish doom metal classic. And hell, even after I saw Candlemass, I was humming this that chorus like 3 weeks, dude. Like, it's still in my fucking head. Like, man. But definitely thumbs up. Very much like it. Second best one here. But,
so I think we're all in agreement. I think we all sadly give the Entombed cover a thumbs down. I don't think anybody's going to go back and listen to it for real. We definitely all give not. Swallow the Sun's Solitude cover two big thumbs, way, way up. The cream of the crop of these three covers. And then a solid thumbs up for stepping out of the comfort zone and a very faithful cover of one of, if not the most famous Candlemass song in Bewitched for Abysmal Dawn's cover of Bewitched. Correct. Didn't misrepresent anybody's opinions there. All right, cool.
Definitely fantastic.
Okay, that's going to do it for covers worth covering. Let's move on into the main event, which is our review for Terracite, the latest full-length release from one of the podcast's favorite bands, Cattle Decapitation. Now, coming off of Death Atlas, at least for me and Bog, especially coming off the record even before that, Monolith of Inhumanity, Cattle Decapitation has been on a real winning streak. Actually, the one before that was the Anthropocene Extinction. And then it was Monolith of Inhumanity. Ever since the dying goat clean vocals have come into vogue here from Travis Ryan, this band has just continued to ascend into the stratosphere of extreme metal. Their catchiness seemingly knows no bound, and it continues to expand here. As well as the outer limits of what you would consider clean vocals, they continue to push the boundaries on this record. I don't want to shoot the wad here all entirely in the opening statement, because I know we all have things we want to talk about here, but let's talk about one thing that Cattle Decapitation has always done well is atmosphere. The outright miasma that this band is able to create is second to none. And I think both Bog and I made mention to in our initial thoughts on the Slack channel was, this album is rim, man. It almost makes you feel guilty for being alive with some of the lyrics.
This is as good of a read as it is a listen. And I think that some of the guilt that we all latched onto, I think, was performed so well, because misanthropy is something that we do encounter a decent amount, as we said, specifically in black metal, but other genres as well in metal. I think that the fantasy aspect, and also the idea that this is a follow-up to an extinction event which happened on Death Atlas, and sort of the horror component of the story that they're telling on Terracite, which is effectively that radiated, it's not explained, bugs begin to infest human hosts and then emerge themselves as sentient exoskeletal beings that are taking over the planet. And there's basically like a war going on between the remaining humans and the Terracites, is horrific. And I think that they're smart. Cattle Decapitation is really fucking smart to try and access emotion in people that otherwise sort of prosaic, regurgitated, just general, like, you know, fuck humanity kind of stuff isn't going to do. And that takes great artistry. And we're just talking about the lyrics here. We're just talking about the story, which is something I say all the time. Narrative. Like, I can't speak highly enough about it. I was stunned. And as I said, guilty and all of the feelings. Like,
to your point, I want to read a piece of the lyrics from Scourge of the Offspring, the pre-chorus. Like, we are the infections, we are pathogens, we are assassins, the gluttonous factions. Curve never flattens when the population fattens. What a wondrous life this could have been, but I'm outnumbered like the stars at night. There's so many of us that need to die. And it just gets more and more damning as you go on and on throughout the record, as Josh continues to be an absolute fucking master on the guitar. The melody that is able to come through here, it almost sounds like harps or violins at times, the effects that are going through on the guitar. Pure emotional nihilism.
I'm going to steal your phrase. And you said this years ago, probably 4 years ago at this point, but you said, so Travis Ryan has officially cemented himself as one of the faces on the Mount Rushmore of extreme metal vocalists. And I think one of the things before I read the lyrics, before I'd studied the riffs in this record, one of the first things that I said is essentially what Richard just said, is that the man is standing on his head vocally. I mean, he's doing three, maybe four different character vocalists. You describe them as the dying goat clean vocals, in addition to his incredibly chilling shrill vocal and his absolutely, you know, just obliterating guttural. He's doing things that nobody else is doing in the genre at all. Like nobody, I've never heard anybody else do the dying goat clean before. It's kind of incredible. He's literally inventing at this point.
And the fact that his lyrics are just getting better and better, just starting to stand totally on his own, in my opinion.
I mean, now that Trevor's out of the picture, I hate to say it, but I mean, it's at this point, like who would we even put up against him? You know,
this is going to be a little bit of a theme for this review, but this comes to us from one of my favorite tracks on this album, and it's called "And the World Will Go On Without You." Every human's DNA, strands of hate forever stay, and this world will go on without you. Will go on without you. Every human's bed is made. Nightmares start when you awake, and the world will go on without you. We brought it on ourselves. We'd be going to hell if it existed beyond this life. The unfathomable grimness on every track of this that just drips on and on and on, all the way to the very end with Just Another Body.
Duel, you had made the comment, and again, I'm sorry for sort of taking the words out of your mouth here, but pointedly, I think you had said that this is, in fact, we have clean vocals from Travis on this one, but we actually have clean vocals, maybe for the first time, be more of an authority on that than I would be with their back catalog on Just Another Body. And so even still, a willingness to go ahead and pull out any inhibitions that they had previously about, you know, what a genre is, like what it is that they're willing to produce.
And I think they saved the best for last lyrically for Just Another Body. But I'm just a body, alive but rotting. A storm of flies that hides behind these eyes. I'm just a body. 8 billion like me. Ugh, that one right in the feels. Burning or hide and scorched alive. And you're just a body, a flesh-lined tragedy. Dead but alive, remembering a time within our lives, in our history. Life in our prime, a fiction of the
mind. Lyrics from Just a Body, too. My favorite segment from this song as well is, a house possessed with sins of flesh, indistinctive desire to procreate, multiplying our mess. Another series of holes in which we're to fill mortal receptacles pumped full of seminal swill. Like, what the fuck?
Stop it. I can only get so hard. Please stop. I can't handle so much. Please, I'm dying here. God damn.
Seminal swill. Not a term that you're ever going to hear from any other band.
1,000%. In conclusion, as the County Cap newbie, person thought Death Atlas was very overrated. Good, but overrated. Very high on this record. In all honesty, taking all my love of death metal, everything aside, this record is about everything I like about extreme metal. It's brutal. It's heavy. It's catchy. Mega. Almost quadruple nihilistic lyrics and catchy, interesting. It's almost the whole package, and I definitely plan on, much like Candlemass, going back and listening to the prior shit. And I might have probably will have an upgraded opinion on Death Atlas, which 3 years ago I heard it, I was very meh on. I did enjoy it, but I felt it was a bit overrated. But in the context, I'll probably have an updated opinion on that, because unlike many people, I can't admit when I'm wrong, and we'll go back and correct my opinions, which unfortunately...
Go back and listen to, knowing that it's all like a lore, it's all a story, like a constant narrative.
Almost like a concept record, which is cool. Very progressive metal-like thing.
Going back to Terracite itself, it's really funny that I've never... I don't recall a record that's made me feel guilty for being alive lyrically.
this is the one.
I think we've given Travis his flowers, both lyrically and vocally. Let's talk about everything else. Their artwork, I think, is pretty much in line with what you expect from Cattle Decapitation. Equal parts interesting, equal parts disgusting. This might be a little bit more traditional death metal. I think this art would play really well on the front of a t-shirt that you sell for $20 at the merch booth.
I believe that... I believe the meme was the artwork this in A Bug's Life from like 01, and it's, I'm not gonna lie, it's kind of better.
No, this is rad. If you look close at it, I speculated, I was like, is this possibly a sculpture? Like, is this really a photograph of something that someone made? I went back and looked at the artist who made it, and he's the same gentleman who has done a few Cattle to Cap covers at this point, including Death Atlas, and so that is not the case. This is an illustration, but okay. It's actually quite impressive. Okay. The fact that it literally psyched me out enough that I wasn't sure if it was something that was potentially sculpted. So I want to give him major kudos for that.
No, it's striking artwork. Like, it makes you think. A lot of, even Death Metal, especially I love Death Metal, a lot of it's just the same thing. Dark, evil, cavernous. Well, it's just
because there's a story here. This is a concept album. You said like a concept album. This is a concept album.
Because
there's like a narrative here. Let's just be honest here. I mean, a casual listener probably couldn't articulate every single word. I think that we all acknowledge, in order to fully understand metal, you have to read the lyrics, because even for me, as long as I've been listening to this genre, I can't catch every phrase. You know, if you listen to things multiple times, you can figure out what's happening in the chorus, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, one of the worst offenders, in my opinion, is Alexi Laiho's vocals from Children of Bodom. I still go back and I was like, I don't think he's actually saying that. Like, I'm reading the lyrics, but I don't know what the fuck is going on here. Like, he's just...
These lyrics brought to you by PBR. Yeah.
I still remember a psych from... But if I appeared, I was so blackout on tour in the U.S., I don't remember being on fucking stage or some shit. He has that much of an alcoholic, which impressive and horrifying simultaneously.
I mean, that's your favorite country there is the Finns, right? Those guys love their vodka, from what I understand, right? So I'd like to go ahead and talk about some of the musical aspects of this album. And I would say, for me, if I had any criticism, it is that at times some of the grooves just felt skewed slightly generic for me. And you know, that's kind of all I have to say. I shouted out Dead End Residence, but I felt like they could have just changed it up a little bit more. There was more leads on Death Atlas. I went back and listened to that one as a counterpoint. And I think that it's interesting, because I criticized for many years Ashes of the Wake by Lamb of God for the same reason. And then I go back and realize that as a part of them, that itself was also a concept record. It was very focused, and it was actually trying to draw attention away from the instrumentation. And I fully believe that it was a conscious decision on the part of Cattle to Cap to maybe minimize that level of it while still keeping the brutal intensity. The drumming is outrageous. Just like, this is one of the most impressive drumming performances I have heard in years on a metal record. Like, my goodness. You know, to the point where
I wanted to,
Duel, if you have anything else to say about that, go for it.
Yeah, I wanted to bring attention to that too. I think we were talking so much about Travis, and a little bit, we mentioned briefly about the instrumentation of the guitars. They almost sound like strings with the melody they're trying to bring in. It almost overshadows just how much of a physical feat this music is that's being performed. Like, if you've ever seen Cattle Decapitation live, you see Josh Elmore playing guitar. He's like wrestling with it, trying to get up and down the fretboard to actually perform these songs, and the drums are absolutely no different. Like, it's a superhuman feat what they're pulling off and making seem so effortless, and this album is no exception. Like, it should not be lost on you just what's going on behind that kit there, as you're bringing attention to.
Scourge of the Offspring, I kind of consider to be maybe the best track on the record, sort of like on level with Just Another Body. They're two very different offerings from this band, and so it's really kind of take your preference, but Scourge of the Offspring has that glib outlook that just, as Duel said, makes you feel guilty for living, which is, again, something that I've never encountered before in metal, you know. And that, in some ways, you know, to talk about it as a complete package and a whole artistic offering, this is something we don't see a whole lot. I was thinking back on it, and I was like, you know, Nile is kind of the only band that jumps into my mind that has this much kind of focus when it comes to a whole and complete, like, point of view on their artistic direction. Because I think that a lot of metal bands are just guys who enjoy playing music, get together and fucking around and, you know, drinking beer, and that's kind of how that stuff comes about. This is a band with a creative director, you know, and it's so pointed, and man, this one hits. I mean, I think that Death Atlas did as well. Terracite, I think that, especially in the post-pandemic world, obviously I would have to assume some of this was inspired by what was happening with COVID-19, especially with that flattening the curve lyric that Duel had read just a while ago. Which, funny, it's funny to me reading it now how dated actually that kind of feels now that we've been out of it for a couple of years. And I think that, sadly, for a younger listen or a younger, you know, repeat listener, they're not going to pick up on that. I don't know if that makes this better or worse for us having been through that experience and getting to experience. Well, yeah.
One of the few, I say, pluses from that era is when you're in line in the grocery store anywhere, the people give you space. I do miss that. Now they're right up on your fucking back or anything. One thing I did enjoy about that era, one of the very few things. But I will say, another thing about this record is the chorus, especially to the tracks Scourge, The Storm, and Solstagia are fucking pure fucking earworms.
Yeah, Solstagia is one of the highlights on the record, I think. Last thing I want to talk about, really, before we start to give our scores, is really the how they construct these songs. It is such an extreme metal record, but it's so digestible at times. Like, some of these choruses, like, are almost poppy in nature. Like, you find they're earworms. They're stuck in your head. You almost want to sing along to them. Even though when you take a step back and realize, one, how almost jagged the vocals are, even though they are the Dying Goat cleans, you know. I'm calling them cleans, but they are still rather extreme, you know. Lady Gaga is not going to be doing these vocals on her next hit single anytime soon. And maybe that's me dating myself, because Lady Gaga
definitely
fucking makes hit singles anymore.
Not really. No.
Closing thoughts, gentlemen. For me, I just want to once again reiterate, like, the creative direction on this album, the creative director, Misanthropy, the fucking outlook, grim music, melodic, but brutal as fuck. It's an absolute physical feat. And Travis Ryan, as Bog said, standing on his head, both lyrically and vocally, but in his technique and in his performance, he kind of stands alone for me on top of the death metal heap. It's like, he is the vocalist in the game right now. IMO.
Yeah, I have a note here that just says, what doesn't this album bring to the table? I mean, this is the reason that I listen to metal, is the moments when I get to enjoy a record like Terracite and, you know, Death Atlas as well. So I think that Cattle to Cap is the top of the game, as you said as well. Not to be overlooked by those who simply write them off as a grind act at this point.
Yeah, and as a newbie to Cattle to Cap, obviously it's fucking for overall great record. And much of Candlemass, I am going to go back and give maybe Death Atlas a second listen. And maybe I might think it's a greater record than 3 years ago when I first heard it. So I am one of, I guess, the few, I feel, is one to have an opinion, go back, listen to a record, and update my opinion. Unfortunately, nowadays, no matter your political persuasion or ideological whatever, you want double, triple, quadruple down. Fuck that. Life's too short for that shit. You listen to it, get new opinions, you update your opinion, you go forward. At least that's how I fucking see it. But I think it's a great record and definitely easily a top 10. Let's say Better Shit comes out of top 15, but still a fantastic, catchy, brutal, groovy representation of death metal or death grind, to be a persuasion, done fucking right.
Not to cut you off real quick, Bog, but I just one last point I want to come across, because I just thought of it because of Richard, but it's really interesting how this band does come from such a clear political perspective, especially one that's aimed through the lens of crisis and the impending climate doom, quote unquote. Get no real backlash. There's no one like, oh, those fucking libtards and cattle decapitation, right? Like, maybe it's just because it's in the metal scene and it's just like, okay, the grim misanthropy, the message just kind of gets accepted as, like, I don't know, storytelling. But for having such a defined political opinion, there's really not a lot of pushback.
You know, I think back to when Pat O'Brien's house burned down, they found all of the guns and stuff like that, right? And I think it was DBO said, like, if anybody wants to criticize metal, like, here it is. It's on a silver platter. And Duel, you leaned into the microphone and you said, yeah, but they don't actually read things. And so I think that that kind of stands true in this instance, is that Terracite isn't called, you know, fuck the oil, like, the oil execs are ruining the planet. Like, that would be an inflammatory title, right? And you know why? It's because, again, they're fucking smart. Cattle to Cap is a fucking smart band. Yeah. They're at the top of the genre right now. Like, so there you go.
3.2 wow. out of 3. Phenomenal. Phenomenal. Like, I've been saying that Cattle's just gets better with every record that they release, and this is absolutely no exception. I think this is by far the best maybe not by far, but this is definitely the best thing they've ever put out.
Top three contender for their best records.
So maybe this is going to be the unpopular opinion amongst this group, but I think Death Atlas is a better record. I went back and listened to it multiple times because I was so high on it, and there are aspects of that that hit heavier for me. I think it's because it's about the extinction event. There's a horror component to this that I think some people would grab onto that isn't necessarily my forte. That being said, you can go back and just listen to the praise that I've heaped upon it previously, and giving it a 3, which is my score for Terracite, clearly demonstrates that this is really the album to beat for Album of the Year, in my opinion.
I do kind of appreciate that opinion that you have about Death Atlas, just about where it takes place in the story is cool. It's why some people's favorite is always going to be The Two Towers, as opposed to Return of the King, just as what happens.
Which is my favorite Lord of the Rings movie, by the way, is Two Towers. So maybe that's telling.
Two Tower.
Unpopular opinion. Yeah. Mine is Fellowship. I think maybe just because I know how much is happening and it ends on such a fucking emotional level, just like with the death of Gandalf. It's just like, yeah. And Gandalf's fucking speech, like, I'm a servant to the secret fire. Just like, bitch, yes.
Before I give a point, I'm curious, in the, I guess, trilogy of storyline, where does Death Atlas come in? Is that number 2? Where is that at in the storyline? As fans?
I would say, like, if you were to start looking at the story, I think the story, as far as I can really recall, started to take shape with the Harvest Floor. And that was kind of like...
From 09?
Yes, like the cover art, that's kind of like where the whole world is kind of like in a police state and you're starting to like have like humans rounded up.
The cattle, Yeah, okay. The cattle. I'm going to give this a 2.8. I think it's a great fucking record. And definitely my favorite Cattle Decap record. I'm much a Candlemass go back list the rest of shit, but this is very intelligent, melodic, brutal, groovy, narrative heavy, death grind, death metal. They're fucking going to call it very good, interesting extreme metal, which is hard to come by 2020 fucking 3. And I can't recommend this much. My elitist gatekeeping piece of shit ass could say, check it out. You may or may not like it. It's interesting at the minimum.
That means Cattle Decapitation's Terracite gets a 9.0 out of 10. With that being said, we've completed the episode, everything that was on the agenda. Now on to the somber
I have one thing
part.
That I want to say, actually. I guess, Duel, I can let you get in that, but we haven't mentioned that this is episode 100. We actually have rounded the corner into triple digits with the publishing of this one.
Quite a milestone for the podcast, you know. Thank you all for listening, and we'll talk to you all next time. Thank you.